Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today on the show, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. We also have reports from Mario Ritter and Brian Lynn. We close the show with an American story in honor of the Christmas holiday, The Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. Now, here's Brian Lynn.
A Peruvian man running for parliament could be the first candidate with Down syndrome to seek office anywhere. As part of his campaign, 27-year-old Brian Russell goes door to door in an effort to take his message directly to the people. Russell told the Associated Press he has used his campaign to raise awareness about people with developmental disabilities. He says he has also tried to present himself as a different kind of candidate, one who will try to fight government corruption that has historically caused political problems in Peru. "I'm someone clean, honest, transparent," Russell told the AP. He spoke to the news agency while campaigning along with his pet dog, Amor, whom he rescued from the street. He said a main purpose of his campaign is to break the image that people with Down syndrome cannot be independent. Russell may be the first person with Down syndrome to run for public office anywhere in the world, the Global Down Syndrome Foundation said. "We are thrilled that Brian Russell is running for Congress in Peru," said Michelle C. Witten, president of the foundation. "As far as we know, he is the first professional who has Down syndrome running for a publicly elected office." She added that Russell is showing the world that we need diversity in all areas of society, including in our governments. Down syndrome is a genetic abnormality that causes developmental delays that can affect a person physically and mentally. Russell is a candidate for Peru Nacion, a center-right party that is not widely known and has had limited success in past elections. But so far, his campaign has received some attention heading into the January 26th parliamentary elections. At one leftist gathering he recently attended, Russell asked people to fight for people like him, no matter what their political beliefs are. "I want people with my condition to have a voice," Russell said. He studied communications at Peru's San Ignacio de Loyola University. His parents, he said, always urged him to find his own way. "I learned how to read and write, walk, run, and eat, basically to respect myself," the candidate has written. "Well, this is really impressive, because Brian is changing the history, and that is the most important thing," said Russell's mother, Gladys Mujica. On a usual day, Russell's activities mostly involve him handing out printed campaign materials to voters, along with carrying signs that explain his positions. "He's looking to do his best," said Carlos Maza, a retiree who said he planned to vote for Russell. Mazza added, "The normal people try to steal from the country. That's a very big difference." Elena Saavedra is an office worker. She shook the candidate's hand during a campaign stop. She said, "We have to give him a chance." I'm Brian Lynn.
A breed of dog that almost disappeared from Japan years ago is very popular in Taiwan. The breed is known as the Shiba Inu. Owners of the dog say its size and behavior make it a good choice for people living in apartment buildings in busy cities. Taiwan's Council of Agriculture says it does not keep records of how many Shiba Inus live on the island. However, one dog breeder sells 4 Shiba Inu puppies each month. A group for people who own the breed has about 60 members. The dogs are a common sight in parks and other open spaces in the capital, Taipei. Li Yu Tsong owns a pet store in the city of Taichung. He has a lot of praise for the Shiba Inu. "They're easy to raise and their overall quality is strong," Li said. The Shiba Inu and other Shiba breeds have been popular in Japan since ancient times. Japanese tribes used them to hunt large and small animals. But the American Kennel Club, a group for dog owners and breeders, notes that nearly all of Japan's Shiba Inu died off during World War II. Many were killed in bombing raids. Others died from distemper, a viral infection that can spread quickly among dogs. The Kennel Club said that after the war, breeding programs helped increase the number of Shiba Inu in Japan, where many now serve as companion dogs. The Shiba Inu is now considered a national treasure. The Taiwan Shiba Inu Club reports that the dog breed started becoming popular on the island about 5 years ago. Li Yu Tsong says the dogs are good-natured, do not have a strong smell, and are generally healthy. He said he sells puppies for between $390 and $820. The Shiba's size also works well in Taiwanese apartment homes because they are smaller than a fully grown hunting dog, Li noted. Larger apartments often house 3 generations of a family, leaving little room for a big dog. Couples may only have a small living space. The dogs rarely make noise, he added, reducing the risk of objections from neighbors. Because it's a smaller to medium-sized dog, basically, the space where they're raised doesn't need to be very big, And so this breed of dog, therefore, is quite suitable for keeping in the cities, Lee said. The Shiba Inu is sometimes described as a cat-like dog. In other words, it is more independent and easier to care for than other breeds. The dogs are often compared to foxes because of their size and pointy ears. Liao Dihua is an official with the Taiwan Shiba Inu Club. He said he likes the dogs because to him they are like wolves and are strong hunters. He raises 11 of the breed at his home and walks all of them twice a day. Japanese culture can be influential in Taiwan, where people respect the country's movies, art, and food. Taiwanese also love dogs, whose images are often seen in the media. Shiba Inu appear in advertisements, and toy dogs are sold online. One Japanese restaurant in Taipei called itself the Honest Shiba Inu. But there can be too much of a good thing. Bruce Hsu is with the Taiwan-based animal shelter called the Pack Sanctuary. He warns that too much popularity for purebred dogs in Taiwan has led to puppy mills. These businesses raise large numbers of a pure dog breed to sell, but they do not pay attention to genetic diseases or carefully raising the animal, leading to problems later on. Hsu said, puppy mills will always produce popular breeds. He advises that those who buy puppies should meet the parents first. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
This week, we answer a question from Tan in Vietnam, who writes, how many ways can we say thank you? Dear Tan, this is a good question as we enter a season of holiday gift-giving in the United States. The verb thank means to tell someone that you are grateful for something they have done or given. The most common ways to say thank you are listed in order from more to less formal. Thank you for coming to the party, formal. Thanks for calling me, informal. You have probably noticed that there are many ways to show feelings of gratitude in English. One is to use the word grateful or gratitude to thank someone. We are grateful for your generosity in giving warm coats to the poor children. Please accept this gift as a sign of my gratitude. Another word you may hear when English speakers thank someone is appreciate. I really appreciate your explanation. Please accept this pin as a sign of our appreciation for your work. Finally, one more way to say thanks to someone is to use the word obliged. I am much obliged to you for the help you've given me. Another way to say it very informally is, I owe you one. Thanks very much to our fan, Tan in Vietnam, for the excellent question. Do you have a question for the VOA English teachers? Please email us with your question. Our email is learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Now it's time for our program, American Stories. Here is Shep O'Neill with The Gift of the Magi by O. Henry.
$1.87, that was all. And 60 cents of it in the smallest pieces of money. Pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by negotiating with the men at the market who sold vegetables and meat. Negotiating until one's face burned with the silent knowledge of being poor. Three times Della counted it. $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but sit down and cry. So Della cried, which led to the thought that life is made up of little cries and smiles, with more little cries than smiles. Della finished her crying and dried her face. She stood by the window and looked out, unhappily, at a gray cat walking along a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day. And she had only $1.87 to buy her husband Jim a gift. She had been saving every penny she could for months, with this result. Jim earned $20 a week, which does not go far. Expenses had been greater than she had expected. They always are. Many a happy hour she had spent planning to buy something nice for him, something fine and rare, something close to being worthy of the honor of belonging to Jim. There was a tall glass mirror between the windows of the room. Suddenly, Della turned from the window and stood before the glass mirror and looked at herself. Her eyes were shining, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds. Quickly she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now, Mr. and Mrs. James Dillingham Young had two possessions which they valued. One was Jim's gold timepiece, the watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in their building, Della would have let her hair hang out the window to dry, just to reduce the value of the Queen's jewels. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her, shining like a brown waterfall. It reached below her knees and made itself almost like a covering for her. And then quickly she put it up again. She stood still while a few tears fell on the floor. She put on her coat and her old brown hat. With a quick motion and brightness still in her eyes, she danced out the door and down the street. Where she stopped, the sign read, Madame Sofronie, hair goods of all kinds. Della ran up the steps to the shop, out of breath. Will you buy my hair? Asked Della. I buy hair, said Madame. Take your hat off, and let us have a look at it. Down came the beautiful brown waterfall of hair. $20, said Madame, lifting the hair with an experienced hand. Give it to me quick, said Della. The next 2 hours went by as if they had wings. Della looked in all the stores to choose a gift for Jim. She found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. It was a chain, simple round rings of silver. It was perfect for Jim's gold watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be for him. It was like him, quiet and with great value. She gave the shopkeeper $21, and she hurried home with the 87 cents that was left. When Della arrived home, she began to repair what was left of her hair. The hair had been ruined by her love and her desire to give a special gift. Repairing the damage was a very big job. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny round curls of hair that made her look wonderfully like a schoolboy. She looked at herself in the glass mirror long and carefully. "If Jim does not kill me before he takes a second look at me," she said to herself, "he'll say I look like a song girl. But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87? At 7 o'clock that night, the coffee was made, and the pan on the back of the stove was hot and ready to cook the meat. Jim was never late coming home from work. Della held the silver chain in her hand and sat near the door. Then she heard his step, and she turned white for just a minute. She had a way of saying a little silent prayer about the simplest everyday things. And now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I am still pretty." The door opened and Jim stepped in. He looked thin and very serious. Poor man, he was only 22, and he had to care for a wife. He needed a new coat and gloves to keep his hands warm. Jim stopped inside the door, as immovable as a dog smelling a bird. His eyes were fixed upon Della. There was an expression in them that she could not read, and it frightened her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor fear, nor any of the feelings that she had been prepared for. He simply looked at her with a strange expression on his face. Della went to him. "Jim, my love," she cried, "do not look at me that way. I had my hair cut and sold because I could not have lived through Christmas without giving you a gift. My hair will grow out again. I just had to do it. My hair grows very fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let us be happy. You do not know what a beautiful, nice gift I have for you." "You have cut off your hair?" asked Jim, slowly, as if he had not accepted the information, even after his mind worked very hard. "Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Do you not like me just as well? I am the same person without my hair, right?" Jim looked about the room as if he were looking for something. "You say your hair is gone?" he asked. "You need not look for it," said Della. "It is sold, I tell you, sold and gone too. It is Christmas Eve, boy. Be good to me, for it was cut for you. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered," she went on with sudden serious sweetness, "but nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the meat on, Jim?" Jim seemed to awaken quickly and put his arms around Della. Then he took a package from his coat and threw it on the table. "Do not make any mistake about me, Del," he said. "I do not think there is any haircut that could make me like my girl any less. But if you will open that package, you may see why you had me frightened at first." White fingers quickly tore at the string and paper. There was a scream of joy, and then, alas, a change to tears and cries, requiring the man of the house to use all his skill to calm his wife. For there were the combs, the special set of objects to hold her hair that Della had wanted ever since she saw them in a shop window. Beautiful combs made of shells, with jewels at the edge, just the color to wear in the beautiful hair that was no longer hers. They cost a lot of money, she knew, and her heart had wanted them without ever hoping to have them. And now the beautiful combs were hers, but the hair that should have touched them was gone. But she held the combs to herself, and soon she was able to look up with a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." Then Della jumped up like a little burned cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen his beautiful gift. She happily held it out to him in her open hands. The silver chain seemed so bright. "Isn't it wonderful, Jim? I looked all over town to find it. You will have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how it looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim fell on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. "Del," said he, "let us put our Christmas gifts away and keep them a while. They are too nice to use just right now. I sold my gold watch to get the money to buy the set of combs for your hair. And now, why not put the meat on?" The Magi were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the baby Jesus. They invented the art of giving Christmas gifts. Being wise, their gifts were wise ones. And here I have told you the story of two young people who most unwisely gave for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Everywhere they are wisest. They are the Magi.
That's our show for today. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with more stories from around the world. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.